Greetings, welcome to Stardate Susitna. I'm the responsible party, Kathleen Fleming. Sun, moon, and planets, those constant yet dynamic celestial companions, all are topics in this week's program. The recent clear days and nights have been generally dazzling and beautiful. Well, let me give you a couple features to focus on. Let's begin with La Luna. She was at her fullest Saturday night. Full moons during the winter months cross high in the sky, much like the summer sun. And when all that reflected sunlight lands on a snowscape, it's just amazing. Friday night, I left work late, around midnight, and after dinking around at the post office and a couple other tasks, I was walking home close to 1 a.m. The moon was illuminating the countryside and the mountain ranges and drowning out all but the brightest stars. And there in the north, up to overhead, was an unexpected treat. The aurora managed to shine through all that moonlight. Bright streaks, slow ribbons, glowing patches. Wow, what might that have looked like in a dark sky? Or photographers hoping to get the moonlit Alaska range in the same frame with the Northern Lights may have gotten their wish Friday night and Saturday morning. Strange thing is, I knew the sky was clear before I left work, so I checked the UAF Geophysical Institute Aurora Forecast website, and they predicted low-level activity, a 1 on their scale from 0 to 9. Aurora may be visible low in the north from Talkeetna, it said. But dude, this was overhead. They definitely underestimated, got it wrong, again. Yes, the Northern Lights are hard to predict, and I'm tending to agree with Aurora photographer Dave Parkhurst, who doesn't pay much attention to the predictions and just makes sure he's out with his gear on a clear winter's night. Our sun is the source of all the above, for the light that reflects off of a full moon and for the charged particles that enter the Earth's atmosphere and cause it to fluoresce in such lovely patterns and colors. I checked the current image of the sun's surface, images that are produced by an orbiting satellite and are available on several astronomy websites online. And there's no obvious source for Friday night's aurora. There are a couple Earth-sized sunspots near the right and left limbs, but no sunspot just right of center to shoot particles our direction. A coronal hole, perhaps, or widespread general emission of electrons and protons in a stronger-than-average solar wind. If you're curious and have internet access, I suggest you go to spaceweather.com and check out the page for January 26 in the archive. They say that a coronal hole in the southern part of the sun is responsible for this aurora activity. I'm writing and recording this show Saturday afternoon, so I don't yet know what we may have seen Saturday night. Could have been another great night to look up. Moving on now to other astro wonders, I want you to keep an eye on majestic Jupiter. He is the first star-like object to become visible after sunset. Earth is pulling further and further away from the massive gas giant, but this planet always shines brighter than the brightest stars. It gets more difficult to see his four large moons when the planet is further away, but you should definitely be watching the King's Motion these days. On Wednesday, the 30th, Jupiter changes directions and returns to normal eastward motion against the background of stars. His retrograde dance has come to an end. In the 20 years of doing this show, I have explained the outer planet's retrograde motion dozens of times. And while I may be mistaken in assuming that you all have been paying very close attention, lo these many years, I will skip the details about retrograde and just say that Jupiter has been slowly scooting toward the Pleiades for a couple of months, and though he is within a fist width of the Seven Sisters star cluster, he's turning this week and will be moving away from the girls with no hope of a rendezvous for about 12 more years. So note Jupiter's position relative to the Pleiades and to bright star Aldebaran, now to the planet's lower left. In a few weeks, you'll notice a change. In a month or two, Jupiter's motion relative to the background stars will be obvious. Well, back to the moon. After being full Saturday night, La Luna spends this week as a waning gibbous. Still big and bright, now highest in the wee hours of the morning. Soon she will leave the evening sky dark and star-filled. On Friday, the moon passes very close below bright star Spica. They are closest during the daytime in Alaska, so moon and star will not be above the horizon for us when they are at their closest. But much of Africa will be able to witness an occultation when the moon crosses directly in front of Spica, which is the brightest star in Virgo and a bit to the right of Saturn. So if mornings are clear at the end of this week, notice the constant eastward progress of the moon by noting where it is relative to first Spica and then Saturn. Another item of interest mentioned in Guy Otwell's astronomical calendar is Groundhog Day. The original celebration at the beginning of February, at least in the ancient Celtic tradition, is to welcome the spring season. It was called Imolc. If you want to look that up, it's spelled I-M-B-O-L-C. February 2nd is a cross-quarter day, approximately halfway between the winter solstice and the vernal equinox, traditionally the first day of spring. Indeed, the next 3 months, February, March, and April, mark the quarter of the year with the fastest rate of daylight gain. Here in the far north, these are not the months of flowers and green grass that one normally associates with springtime, but the increasing daylight virtually shouts a springtime cheer. In the Eastern Orthodox and some Eastern Catholic churches, February 2nd celebrates the Presentation of Jesus at the Temple, also called Candlemas, one of the 12 great feast days, with Christian origins dating back to a few hundred years after the death of Jesus. The ancient Irish and Scottish name for Imolc is Brigid, or St. Brigid's Day after Christian influence came to the island. Brigid is the patron saint of midwives. Birthing is, of course, a prominent feature of springtime, and many cultures observe this cross-quarter day as a fertile time. In the U.S., the Pennsylvania Dutch people have a huge celebration and wait for a groundhog to emerge from his den and look for his shadow. The legend goes that if he, could be Punxsutawney Phil, does see his shadow, they have 6 more weeks of winter. If no groundhog shadow, then it'll be a shorter time before the spring thaw. Weather forecasting via a burrowing animal's shadow at the beginning of February has old world roots. It was a badger or a snake pre-America. And if Pam Robinson were here, we'd probably be doing a seasonal celebration program all about this cross-quarter day's traditions and how the increasing light affects us and the earth. Aloha, Pam. And there you have it. The UAF website is still calling for level 1 aurora, but I suspect we have a better chance than that of again seeing the northern lights high in the northern sky, even overhead. Watch the moon pass below Leo the Lion, then close to Spica and Saturn in the pre-dawn sky later this week. And make Jupiter your pet project for the rest of this dark season. He will be moving away from the Pleiades and through the horns of Taurus the Bull until perpetual light steals the stars away from the Northland. Have a great week, and whenever the nights are clear, dress warmly and keep looking up.